Welcome to another episode of The Craft, first of the new year. I am Nick Pollock, and joining me, it's a special guest for PitchCon Live. It's Enosaurus. Eno, what are we going to talk about today?
Well, we will talk about stats, because we always do. I mean, we will talk about pitching stats. We'll talk about pitching. We'll talk about all the things we talk about. But I wanted to set us on a sort of a more 30,000 foot level, like further away, a little bit softer takeoff. Yeah. Where, who do we like better than the stats say we should? That's right. My question to you. Who do we like better than the stats say we should? Something about,
you know, it's us versus feel, the machine, you know?
Yes, us versus the machines today. So, you know, you've put together your rankings. Mine are coming out shortly. You know, I'm staring at these things every day. Okay. And it's some part of my process is just sort by the PPERA, sort by PPK percentage, sort by the revamp stuff plus, you know, like, you know, and, you know, in that process, I'll find, this guy, I just can't move this far down. And I didn't plan to talk about him, but, you know, somebody like an Aaron Nola who, you know, the PPERA is 3.71 and, you know, he's kind of established and in some ways boring, and there's going to be players around him where people are like, ooh, but I like this guy and he's young and he could be better and, you know, all these things. But I found that I keep him reasonably high for, you know, that kind of ERA. Because I think he's a lock for a ton of innings, and like in terms of pitchability, like the dude knows what he's doing now. Like he's got the three fastballs basically. He's got the big breaking ball. He's got a good enough change, and he can put them all together. I kind of think that we won't ever see it like a really bad season until maybe the velo starts really falling off. And so, I think he's just so established and so safe that he deserves to be a little bit higher than his projections sort of say he should be. Maybe it's still a stat. The stat is innings. You know, you but go. Still, you know, like, you know, that's the kind of feel I want to give today. So I was wondering if somebody, you know, that was probably the highest name that I'll talk about today. I'm just looking over there with that 3.71 ERA. He's surrounded by like Bryce Miller with a 3.4 ERA and Hunter Brown with a 3.4. And, you know, like, why do you have him that high? Well, because he's Aaron Nola.
Yeah, it's I have it in different groups. Where I have like my Holly, which is you're not an ace, but it's someone for your fantasy team that you're just going to keep in there. You're not going to think twice about it. Yeah. And it's, you're not going to think you need to drop them, but you're also not like, okay, this is my guy who's going to save my week. Yeah. That generally is like close to a 24% K rate, not a 2.5 ERA, but not a 4.5 ERA. Mm-hmm. A good enough whip. He's going to get you wins. Like he's just helping. This is a helper, that's a Holly. Then the other one is a Cherry Bomb. I defined it this year as cherry bombs stay on your team while hipsters are not, like heading inducing pitchers stifling the entire roster. Like those are the same same mold of, oh my gosh, so exciting, great.
You don't cease a cherry bomb? Like you can blow up?
Exactly. Okay.
Yeah, you're never gonna drop him, but
Blake Snell.
Blake Snell
is a cherry bomb too, right? And I think there is a realm, there's something, especially as I've done these for years, I think actually something that gets lost is there are some seasons that you want to chase the cherry bombs and some years that you don't. And
or maybe even on the roster, you kind of want to maybe pair.
Sure. You know, yeah. Like, you can do that too. Yeah, absolutely.
Like you don't want, if you made your roster all Hollies, you'd be like, you probably wouldn't have the best ERA in your league.
Right. You have to put yourself in a position to win it. Yeah. You know, if you're not first, you're last. And I know we always like make fun of that with Ricky Bobby, but it's very true. You have to play to win the game, not to get fourth.
Yeah,
right.
But the innings are so important. So like I try to mush these guys together. I'd love to have a cherry bomb and Aaron Nola, you know?
Right. Exactly. And I think that's how you can do it. You can say, look, I understand, that this guy isn't going to give me X amount of strikeouts and also isn't going to be that league winner while someone else could. But if I only go for those other ones, then I give myself no opportunity in season to find the holes. And I'm just too far in a ditch. that I can't get out of this anymore.
Or I go craps on all the guys. I get all the bad parts, the cherry bombs in one,
right, exactly,
one team, and I'm just screwed.
So I'm with you about Aaron Nola not being, I agree with the projections, and I agree with you that for the projection side, it's not necessarily the fantasy side, right? Mm. And I think there is also something to be said about, and what you mentioned there is more of consistency and pitchability is established and being a veteran and what that means. And it really means that you have a floor and efficiency through a game. And that is something that I've been trying to quantify effectively for a while. We have our out percentage, for example, that Taylor Tarter's done a really good job of covering on Pitcherless this past year, which is just about, look, a lot of those cherry bombs or those hipster types, one of the biggest problems with them is that they aren't efficient inside of a bat. How many pitches it takes to get an out is more so, or they lose guys, or they don't have those three pitch strikeouts, for example, right? And how Logan Webb goes deep is because he's efficient in his at-bats, right?
I suggested that, you know, for some people in their leagues, they're thinking about like, oh, you know, I need someone for the week. I have a weekly league, right?
Right.
And you could have someone that has one start, but he's a five and dive, you know, with a nice strikeout rate, but he only gets to six Ks and five,
right?
Because he only goes five. And, you know, if you look at, you know, what Logan Webb did last year, he made it to five strikeouts in two thirds of his starts. So if you were looking at on a weekly level, that five and dive guy might not get the win either.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Whereas Logan Webb, you know, will go seven. He might only get you five strikeouts, but he's more likely to get the win if he goes seven. So there's all these like competing things that you're looking for. So I just, sometimes you want to give some love to the bulk guys.
Yeah. Right. And Aaron Nola is someone that will figure out a game. Right. And that's really what it is. He will find a way to get deeper into the game and change things. And that is a skill set that I'm trying to appreciate more. I think it's something that is lost a bit from the analytics side. It's more from the eye test. Like people say, no, he's a dude. He's going to be whatever. Right.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny. Actually, I remember last year in the craft, I was like, man, Framber Valdez is like, what, 4.3 ERA right now. He can't do anything. You know, he's not very good at having like length low. And you're like, he's Framber Valdez. He'll figure it out. And what does he do? He has like the greatest 2 month stretch with his curveball coming back. Right. And I didn't give him enough credit for that. I was just pretty much like, look, it's not there, you know? And right. There is something to be said about those veterans that are going to find the stability. I mean, Jose Barrios every single year is the great undulator.
Ooh, man, you know? His projections are awful.
Well, it's because I don't like him either because he's a Toby. Even though you heckled me, he's not a Toby like 3 years ago.
Now he's definitely a Toby. But so weird. Here's the weirdest thing. When he had a bad ERA, the year we were talking about, he was having a bad year. And I was like, no, it's all going to turn around. The stuff is good. Like, you know, he's better than this. He's better than a Toby. And he didn't really turn around that year. And then he went and had the 2 years that I thought he should have. But the underlying numbers are terrible now.
Right. It's so strange.
The stuff is bad. The Ks are gone. And now he's having the mid-threes ERAs. Like, I don't trust it at all.
I don't either. And I think it is that intangible we're talking about, just about execution and moments and being able to find a way to get through a game that I know just sound like I even hate myself saying it. And also, I get it. like these are the kind of things like, oh, he's just good enough. Don't worry about it. I'm like, oh, how? And, you know, it's okay. Barrios' curveball is sometimes there and he gets those out that way. I mean, the one guy I got to say that watching him pitch last year in the second half, I can't tell you how many times I just screamed at my monitor, like, how is this happening? How is your fastball allowing so few ICR? That is a really good ICR rate for this fastball. While everything else, the splitter, which was hyped up, wasn't very good, actually. And the breaking stuff wasn't very good. And there's just nothing else except this stupid fastball. And it worked. And that's Bowden Francis. And
I have him on my list. I like it better than the numbers.
I know. Dude, I know how to segue, you know.
I'm a pro, man.
I got this.
No.
Tell me about Bowden Francis. Why is he better than the projections?
Well, you know, in terms of, you know, the underlying numbers, I turn to stuff a lot. And stuff is, you know, for Bowden Francis, you know, in 2024, The curveball 106. Yeah, it's pretty, it's slow curveball, but it's got big shape, you know. The four seam 97 out of 100. So below average, not that great. The four seam 100 exactly. Not that great. I mean, just like an average four seam. And then the sinker 86, and the slider 89. So you're like, it's like two meh breaking balls, a meh fastball, a bad fastball, and an average slider. Like how's this going to work? One thing I did notice though was Stuff Plus has his splitter is better than, we were always going to talk about stats, but so anyway, Stuff Plus has his splitter better than Kevin Gausman's. And I'm like, like, first of all, I don't believe that. And then second of all, maybe Stuff Plus is not so great on splitters.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, well, that's the thing also with us and sweepers is that the sample is weird and we pull it from certain things or not. So like, for example, we love sweepers our first year because we were just pulling Otani's for the most part. And like splitters can be strange too. So, cause there's just a lesser thrown pitch. So that might be part of it.
And I, listen, I think in the end, having watched him a little bit, I just think that the four seam has enough shape. And then the breaking balls have good shape, even if they don't have good velocity. I wish he could throw them harder. Maybe he'll come to spring and throw them harder and make me right for the wrong reasons. But
yeah, oh God, that happens every year. We're like, this guy isn't good. And all of a sudden they add a new pitch. I'm like, see, I told you. I'm like, yeah. Just breathe, Nick.
Yeah. But I see four pitches. And you know, another thing that he has that I used to not care about so much and now I care about a little bit more is command.
Yeah. Oh, so wait, I'm sorry. Can you say that one more time?
Command.
One more time?
Command. I like it. Why are you doing this to me?
I think we're both like gravitating towards the same middle over the years.
I used to be, right. I'm a stuffist. I don't care.
About right. And I was like, I think command is the market. You got efficiency
burned by enough like, Edward Cabreras to last a lifetime. So.
Right. And I get burned enough by like, I don't know, like I see like George Kirby. I'm like, Merrill I don't care.
Kelly or something, or you don't care. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh God.
But, so I just see I see two fastballs and, you know, obviously the four seam he uses more, but I see two fastballs. I have number of fastballs as a column when I'm doing my rankings now.
Mm-hmm.
And I see five pitches. I have number of pitches as a column too. Nice. And I actually did a query on rates and barrels today because we were doing pitchers week. And, all I asked was, do you have six pitches? And we looked at the list of pitchers with six pitches and they were almost all good. Now he doesn't have six, he has five, but like, there's something about this, like, oh, he picked up a pitch. He picked up a splitter. He has two breaking balls. Like he has pitch ability. Like he has, he has the ability to add a pitch. Like he has some feel he has. And I know he's 28 and it's taken forever, but I think this is why it takes forever. It's like, finally figuring out the right combination of pitches and movements and plan of attack. And the fastball, it's not going to be as good as last year. I am not saying that, but I'm saying that maybe he still will be like a mid to high threes, you know, guy that will be usable in fantasy and will have some good stretches.
So would you take him in a 12 teamer?
He's like a last pitcher type. Yeah.
Okay. So the way I see it,
I'd like
is
to know some velo. Like he could go back to his closer, like his relief velo, like more 94 plus, you know?
So what I'm hearing is, I mean, generally when it comes to your last pitcher in a 12 teamer, for me, it has to be someone that is going to be well established early, like showcase, hey, you are way better than being taken as the last pick. Or you're definitely not the last, like you shouldn't be on my team. Like it needs to be one or the other. Like, because then that last spot, if you're fine, if you actually are acting like the 276th pick, then I got to go and chase something else off the waiver wire.
Yeah.
I've got some
other guys around him. So he's like, this is like the 70s in my rankings. I think that's good. That's like, you know, in a 12 team league, you kind of want six, seven pitchers, right? You know? I think you want like six starting pitchers mostly.
Well, no one listens to my rankings, so it's great. So I always get guys that are in my 50s. I'm just kidding.
I have guys down there that maybe fit what you're talking about better. Like Spencer Arrighetti is like a pooper get off the potty guy, right? Like he's either going to...
He's on my list! Look at you doing segues like a pro!
There you go. Tell me about Spencer Arquette. Because that might actually be better than Bowden Francis. Because you'd be like, wow, the strikeouts are going to be there. If he puts it together, then he's going to be way better than my last pitcher.
You know, so I can't remember who sent it to me. I think it might have been Michael from First Pitch Arizona, and who sent me an article from David Lorelia, mm-hmm. Who I got to meet in First Pitch Arizona. I've read his articles for ages. I think he's one of the more underrated writers because the interviews he does with players are just incredible. And he did one with Spencer Arrighetti. And the way Arrighetti talked was so good. How he understands, like, hey, I came up. I was like, cool. I got all this stuff, whatever. I'm just going to throw it in the zone. Then I realized, like, oh, no, I need a pitch. I need to actually, like, yeah. do things with this. I need to work on deception about what they're thinking as I throw these pitches and where I should actually locate it. And so he came up for three games, went down, and then came back up. And then the second half was just brilliant, right? It was him locked in. And when he first came up, I remember actually being excited because Arrighetti is a guy that throws like 94 with a very flat fastball and intent to go upstairs with it, which is like, okay, we're cool with this. Mm-hmm. And then he has multiple swing and miss breaking balls. And when I see that, it's just you have two secondaries that get whiffs and a four seamer that can confidently earn strikes. Like, that's great. He has five pitches ultimately. He has a cutter in there too. He has all this pitch ability. You want to talk about six pitches? I think he has six. He might have five, but I think it's six. And then you have the Astros. And I'm going to say the Astros, I think, is a very good situation to pitch in. You generally have a good environment. Now, I mean, you can say what you want about, oh, God, is it Dakin? Do I have to say Dakin now? Instead of Minute Maid Park, it's Dakin Park. They changed the name, didn't they?
I don't even. I try not to even. So when they play in Houston.
I can't even. When they play in Houston. You know, it's funny. I didn't even know that Dakin existed. And then I went to Hong Kong. And the appliance
everywhere.
Up there, my sister was Dakin. And then the first store I saw was Dakin. I was like, what?
They make air conditioners.
Right. Yeah. Great. And how did they have enough money to buy the name? I don't know. Regardless, Spencer Arrighetti's in this really nice situation, has legitimate strikeout potential. I think the Astros are going to let him fly, you know, five, six innings. The one thing that made me concerned a bit while watching him last year is it felt a little chaotic in his, in where he was going at times. It was just kind of filling up the zone as opposed to, cool, I'm going to execute an at-bat. But I think he got better at it as it went on. And yeah, he's a perfect example. Look, if it's just like too ridiculous in the first game or so, I'm like, all right, move on, you know? Mm-hmm. But the projections on him are just like 4.5 ERA, 1.34 whip, you know, just don't touch this guy whatsoever. And I found myself coming way around on the pasta pirate, Mr. Arrighetti, over time. So I'm a huge fan.
I'm looking at the heat map of his fastball. Maybe I should look versus lefties and see how he looks in me.
Oh, yeah. That's actually been a massive habit for me when I go over my teams. I do lefty repertoire split, righty repertoire split.
He can really hit up and away with the four seam, which is good. But he doesn't really hit inside, which is something you look for. But
yeah, I generally do. I think sinker is, if he got a sinker to do that, honestly, these days is what works.
But I'm looking at the cutter right now. Oh, he doesn't get the cutter inside that well either.
No, it's a lefty. He uses it as a strike pitch over the plate.
Yeah, it's over the plate. So
yep.
He doesn't really go inside to lefties. He's just kind of like middle away. And the command isn't great. I just want to point out real quick, he did really do a lot better. The Stuff Plus revamp, I think, is going to be up next week. And he went up to 111, which makes a lot more sense because, you know, and I think it had to do with having multiple fastballs and the way that we're treating fastballs now. He's got the cutter went up and the four seam went up. So I think that makes more sense for a guy with his strikeout rate. I think he struck out almost 30% of the guys he saw.
And what's also really important to know is that he was really bad for a while. And then all of a sudden he was really good. Spencer Arrighetti through the last 3 months was a 3.08 ERA with a 1.18 whip and a 29% K rate and just an 8% walk rate. That's Spencer Arrighetti. Now, if you looked at Spencer Arrighetti the day before, and you're like, I don't know if this guy's going to be good, Nick, because he has a 6.13 ERA and a 1.65 WHIP and a 12% walk rate and a 25% K rate. So he obviously fixed himself and had a lot more of that control in the zone. That cutter also against lefties, it was in the middle of the plate, but it was a sub 30% ICR, with a 70% strike rate. It actually helped him combat the four seamer a ton, because the four seamer does get hit by left-handers. But anyway, Arrigetti's the perfect example of a guy that I would be going for late in my drafts. He technically has six pitches, according to us. Like, he threw like a rare slider in there. Maybe there's a sinker to help against right-handers inside, because only a 10%, actually an 8% swing strike rate against him last year, as he kind of threw it down the middle. Got to get that thing up a little bit more. Arrigetti is certainly on the list of, like, yeah, projections. You're wrong. Sorry, buddy. outside of that, I mean, I'm not totally sold about him. Francis won. I want to be wrong. And maybe he does show up at velocity, which is also one of the things that we talked about in an earlier episode, or guys that we're excited about for next year. And I got to think that I'm going to hear about Landon Rupp now. I'm just, the projections probably don't like him as much as you do.
No, I've got a completely, I'm not even sure what's going on. I think they have Hicks as their fifth starter right now. So
Rupp isn't even in the rotation.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, man.
And I think he did get hurt a little bit by our revamp. But
oh, that's what I heard crying the other night. It must have been you from California. Yeah, that was...
This is the this is one where I don't really have any numbers for you. I'm kind of this one's just feel. He's so cheap right now in drafts.
Uh-huh.
And last year he had a 3.3 ERA. With a 24% strikeout rate for a team that will deliver him wins, he's might go to the Hall of Fame. And he's 38, so he's a little bit old. But you, Darvish? Are we just forget? Yeah. You know, are we just done with him? The projections aren't great. You know, even Oopsie has a 4.01. You know, the bat has a 4.38, which the bat's up. and you know, they're all, I guess, you know, they all use aging curves. So some of them will maybe use the aging curve more aggressively, and I get it. But he missed time last year. It had nothing to do with his arm.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and, I don't know. I could see him resolving whatever the personal issue it is, or finding some way to like have peace with it. And benefiting from the time off, you know,
right.
Maybe I'm just telling stories here, but I also have just like a tremendous amount of respect for him as a pitcher. Just,
oh yeah.
You know, just a guy who constantly just picks up little things from guys around him. And it's even hard to say, oh, he has, you know, whatever I have, what do I have listed for him as number of pitches? I have six pitches for him. So he's on that six pitcher list.
We have eight. Maybe seven. We have seven.
I think he can go even beyond that, because hopefully we'll come up with this story about all his pitches this spring. Finally. Mm-hmm. But when I was talking to him about it, he showed me his curveball grip, and I was like, well, is that the one that you got from Pierce Johnson or not? And he's like, oh yeah, but then I also do this. And I was like, okay, so that's just one pitch where you already have two grips, and you're
right.
And I bet you're like that for everything, you know?
Oh my gosh.
And if you watch his movements, you know, during the season, you'll notice that even things that we call a certain pitch will get harder or softer, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I don't even know if in your group you have the EFIS. He does actually throw the EFIS sometimes.
Oh yeah, no, we certainly just said I'm not adding a whole category for slow curve. I'm so sorry.
Just because you, like, I don't want to throw like eight a year.
Yeah, we're not gonna do this.
But you know, I just think he's one of my favorite pitchers to watch, actually, despite, you know, sometimes the command going, and you know, doesn't really have like overpowering stuff in that, you know, he can be a nibbler a little bit. He's kind of cutter, slider, mm-hmm. cutter, sweeper, cutter, you know, like kind of plays around with the, yeah, there you go.
Right. So I'm putting on the screen right now, the whole,
they look distinct, but like, you know, what is that like one of some of those, it's hard insane. Splitters? Is that,
well,
that used how, to have the Supreme? He used to have the Supreme.
Yeah, do you see that? Do you see a bridge between every single island of pitching? Yeah,
exactly.
You know, it's not supposed to be like Pangea.
Yeah,
right.
There are other guys where it's just, oh, if you look at Tanner Houck, it's like There's a dot way over here and a dot way over here. That's it. There's nothing else going on. This is the opposite of Tanner Houck.
Oh, man.
So I don't know. There's just something about this that, you know, I just put him on a team recently and I was happy to do it. And it was a 15-team league, yes, but he was like my fifth starting pitcher. And I was like, I love it. Yeah, what is that?
What is that? There? What is this?
He does that. He did that on purpose. I don't think that's a miss. I think that's something he did on purpose once just to be like, what if I do this?
Wow, what if I get like a ton of rise and a lot of arm side movement? Yeah,
that's, I mean, one of those could be the supreme. He's like, I don't throw it very much. And I was like, ever? And he goes, sometimes.
Okay, wait, tell everybody what the supreme is.
Supreme is like basically a splinker.
Mm.
He's got,
yeah. Let me see if I got a ball here.
Always, you always have to have a ball.
So, I mean, I don't know exactly where his seams are and stuff, but like, you know, he's got, you know, a sinker is kind of like along the seams, and then a, you know, a splitter is like further, and then yep. The supreme is like further, but it's not the fork, which is like jammed all the way in.
This is how I would do a fork though.
Yeah. I know that the seams, I'm not exactly sure what the seams, I don't have the picture in front of me, but it's like the supreme is like, it's not jammed all the way in. Where yeah. like your knuckles are really spread, it's a little bit more like a sinker, like it's in the tips of the fingers.
So,
but it's more like spread than a sinker. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a little bit like a splinker.
Mm. Oh, man, good old splinkers, huh?
Because all the splinkers, what is a splinker? A splinker is basically somewhere between a sinker and a splitter. And when you look at people that have said they throw splinkers, they don't get as much drop, and they're harder than splitters.
Right.
But they get more drop than sinkers.
Yeah.
And I think you kind of get drop from kind of spreading those fingers because you're killing the spin a little bit. Like tighter your fingers are, like a four seam, you're kind of like, you're tight on there and you're ripping the seams. And that's a high seam. That's a high spin pitch.
So one of the things that I remember learning a lot about was it's about just how much of your finger is on the baseball. Right. Mm. And so for me in college, I threw a two seamer, which I also did it incorrectly. I didn't even understand the physics of it at the time. Where like I had my finger out. I thought I was doing like the reverse cutter movement, like a shooto. I thought that's how I got the movement instead of seam shifted wake. So instead of putting it down the railroad tracks, as Lewis Thorpe would say, I did it like this, like an idiot. But I would just do this anyway. It didn't matter. But so I have it very loose.
Did it work? Did it
sink? Oh, it totally worked. Totally worked. But then sometimes I actually did this and I actually got the shooto movement when I wanted to get away from a righty. It's fine. The main thing though is like, cool, how far away is the ball from the webbing of your hand, right? So here's a lot of space. That means I can throw it.
Well, that makes sense to me when I think about a curveball, because in a curveball you're putting so much finger on it.
Yeah,
you're
putting it into your hand as much as you're doing that. I would do this. I would actually have a gap here, just be easier
for
me.
Some people like don't. This. Some people are like try to get it right in there.
Joey Lucchese, I mean, come on, that's a
that is no, a but even sure, like when they right? teach my kids and stuff, they talk about like just get it in there and like,
oh, interesting,
like accent, like
yeah, you know,
like Yamamoto is kind of like this.
Yep, it's all about however you feel like you're getting,
but that's a lot of finger on the ball, on the
right?
Seam,
right? So, like, it would be the chunk of the bottom of my index finger if I really pulled it in, and that's pulling it down. For me, I was always about the top of my index finger, so that's where everything, all the feel of pitching came from. Every pitch had to go through that. So for a curveball, for that, I needed it focused there. But what I'm getting at is you have the sinker and I have the forkball where I'm like really like no webbing to it because I wanted this to get the loop to it. Mm. But for the fosh, or if you want to go to a splitter, I could do this where it's not quite in the webbing, but it's more so than the sinker. So it's going to slow it down. It's going to emphasize more of that drop to it, as you said, kill the spin. And the deeper you went, the more split it got. Right. Mm. And that's just kind of how it is, just really.
So you're
how
saying much the more finger kills the spin in this yes, situation.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Right. So the more of your entire finger, but with a four seamer, like what you really want is you don't.
Oh yeah.
Want
I've heard it's like a viper.
At all. Like a viper. Exactly. Like a claw. The venom, right. Coming out. So the more that you touch it, the more that you resist the ball. I mean, that's why it's called a palm ball for a changeup. Right. Mm. So you would stick in your palm. So you would resist. A circle change is essentially throwing a two seamer or a four seamer, but putting the ball deeper in your hand.
I bet you Darvish is a little bit like you too. Like everything has to go through his fingertips. You know what I mean? Like he's kind of a breaking ball god, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's just like, for whatever reason, your brain connects to certain nerves, like, yo, you my boy.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to talk. You know, and that's how it was.
I think some guys are middle finger dominant.
Oh, yeah. I mean, those are the ones I want to do a Vulcan. Because I'm like, why would you ever do a Vulcan instead of the other one where you go through an index finger? But some people want that. So there you go.
Anyway, I just think, you know, and I think you, Darvish, like, I think you will actually know a little bit more about him early. Like, you'll know in spring if he's healthy. Like, you might be able to get some fastball readings. You know what I mean? And if he's, even if he's like a 3.8 ERA guy, like, the Padres are going to give him wins, and he's a genius. So,
I'm so on board with you. I think Darvish is going to help your fantasy team.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, sure, it could be a little bothersome at times. Like, there are games where he just doesn't have command of stuff. And I was talking to somebody, and they were calling it like it's a canvas that he paints every day. He doesn't know necessarily what he has, but he figures it out. And some days it's just bad. And that's how it is with every single pitcher. But I think for the most part, Darvish was effective for your teams last year, right? And I don't think he will harm you this year. So that's a great pick. I mean, I think you mentioned him too, but Lucas Giolito, just everyone just gives him no respect, and it blows my mind. That's all. That's all I really want to say about that.
I mean, I could see numbers having a hard time with like a straight change.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just so boring looking in the numbers. It's like, so you're just going to throw a thing that looks like your fastball. Like, well, I mean, one of the things that's interesting about Stuff Plus is like early on, one of the things that really surprised everyone was like, oh my God, sweepers. Like, I think you kind of pointed that out when you were talking, and it's like, oh my God, sweepers. And so the Mariners are like, let's teach everyone a sweeper, you know? And even the Dodgers is like, let's acquire relievers and teach them sweepers. Let's Urias and Phillips. Hey, sweepers. The Yankees, they Clark Schmidt, Hayden Wesnitzki. They're like, sweepers for all the guys who are kind of, you know, over here. You know, and then we kind of realize, oh, well, sweepers aren't that good, you know, righty on lefty, and, you know, not everybody's sweeper is good. And, like Logan Gilbert came up and was like, it looks good, but I have no idea where it's going. I can't use it.
Right. And then killed Lance McCullers with his throwing the pizza. And then
might have hurt some people, but you know, Keith Meister thinks it's hurting everybody who throws. And I think some people have the mechanics to throw it without hurting themselves. I don't think they're all throwing pizza boxes.
Oh, no. Right. But then also you do have the aspect, which I think really affected Nick Pivetta, where against right-handers, his four-seamer is way worse than his four-seamer against left-handers. And it's not because of the four-seamer. It's because he throws curveballs to the lefty and then sweepers to the righty. And he's a very over-the-top guy. So but then he has to come down for the sweeper. And it's just like, people can tell that this is not the same arm angle as the sweeper.
Yeah, Bryce Miller struggled with that too. He's a very over-the-top guy. Every time he threw a sweeper, they're like, I know what that is. I can see
it. Exactly. So it's not for everybody. And I think, honestly, sweepers are made for your Clark Schmidt type, your Michael King, your lower sinker.
It's like the old sinker slider. It's sinker sweeper, you know. But my point was that, where was my point? What were we talking about?
Lucas Giolito and the changeup. Actually, PLB loved it in the last 3 years.
It does, even the straight changeup. Yeah. Stuff play. Yeah, see, it's location focus because he like throws it in the zone. He likes to throw
Kyle
it high in the zone.
Chat. He'll tell us.
Yeah. But tell us if Stuff actually loves it. But what I'm saying is that, like, you know, the models get better and our understanding of them get better. And then also what you were talking about, the sampling, like there's more and more of them. Our model gets better at knowing what's good because there's more and more of them. And so what happened with changeups was, you know, the model was better at power changeups early because it didn't have seam shift awaken. It didn't have before Hawkeye, there were stuff models internally before Hawkeye. And what did they say? That thing that, you know, Felix Hernandez threw, that was awesome. The Greinke one, that was awesome. We can tell you why it's awesome, because it has a ton of movement. So if you're trying to throw a changeup now, throw it as hard as you can and get a lot of movement out of it. And that was an easy way to teach kids too, right? I feel like it was like, just throw it so you get the most movement. Yeah, get as much move as you can out of it. That's what you're looking for. Now I think we're getting a little better at understanding some seam effects and what the value of seam shifted wake is and some of these things. And I think our understanding of changeups is refining, our understanding of split fingers is refining in front of us. And so what we saw last year was the first year that sinkers came back into vogue. It was the first year sinkers were thrown more year over year than they had been in like 15 years. And cutters are up. And I think a lot of these are because our models are getting better at them and are understanding that you need more than one fastball is getting better. So like, it is weird to try and study. Anytime you try and study pitching, you're studying like a snapshot of time.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And it's going to be moving. And so, you know, somebody might criticize something for like Stuff Plus for like, oh, you guys just retrained the model again this year. And that's why it's better. It's like, well, we had to, because if you don't, if we froze Stuff Plus in 2021 and just kept referring to it, it would just get worse with every year because we weren't taking in any new information.
Right.
And so, you know, sometimes I look at Giolito and I'm like, I bet you our understanding of how good your pitches are is only going to get better, you know, our understanding, like, you know, these new metrics that are out on BP that are kind of on Baseball Prospectus that are about how pitches fit together.
Yeah.
You know, I think Giolito's, you know, four seam fastball and high, weird, boring changeup is actually like kind of cool. And he was all in on the high changeup
for a long time.
Yeah. You know? And he doesn't project well. He doesn't look good in the projections.
So a couple things quickly on Giolito here. I remember last year before he had Tommy John, his velocity was up in the spring. And we were like, oh, this is going to be really cool. Giolito, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And then all of a sudden, nope, okay, we're done. But then it's not TJ. It's an internal brace, I believe, because he's supposed to come back sooner. And I remember him saying like, why is everyone saying I'm going to be gone until like June or whatever? I'm going to be ready to go. Like, who cares? So that's cool. That's a positive. Also in Boston, I'm pretty excited to see what happens there with Andrew Bailey and company. I feel like he's gone to these organizations that haven't really helped him out a ton. You've seen the Angels when we've talked about them before. We've also talked about how the Guardians are really good at preparing people for the majors, but not really when they're in the majors as much. And that's also who Giolito was pitching for before free agency. And it's just a situation of like, you have this fresh start, Giolito. I kind of want to throw away the other years. And this changeup is still a very good changeup. I think we're getting a better understanding of the necessity of your arsenal as a whole. Like you were talking about this BP article, and I'm sure I need to check that one out, but I'm not surprised to hear it. There's also earlier today in the latest innovations of pitching development panel talking about deception being more of a thing that's not just like high in the baseball, but actually how to manipulate and throw your pitches in certain lanes that mimic other ones so that guys that you can throw a straight changeup but actually is deceptive. I mean, Yoán Santana, his whole career was made because he had to study his fastball and make his changeup look exactly like that.
This is kind of a weird little side, but I know there's a panel for rule changes. And the one funny one that was told to me by somebody who works for a team that he liked was he would draw a dot on the ball. Like he would draw shapes on the ball that they play with so that hitters could see seam shifted weight. Because he thought that there's so much advancement going there and that's going to lead to so many more strikeouts that if you want to do something about strikeouts, help the hitters see the spin better.
You know, that was it Zach Greinke to Verlander or the other way around? What? Do you know this story?
What's that?
About, I think it was Verlander fixing his slider. Was that Greinke told Verlander, no, you're using the ball the wrong side of the ball.
Oh, because of the logo?
Because of the logo. And it gave it away.
It would be what if you just made the logo like bigger and bolder and in some way that like, oh, now I can see.
Just double it.
Yeah.
All right. No, we just wanted to promote our logo. Yeah. Really important. Now, I actually thought you were going to mention something like, hey, they can only throw X percentage of pitches in a game once over 100 that are.
I don't
not
like that one.
I hate it.
I just don't like about it too is like it's anti-competitive. It's just like, I can't do this good thing.
Right. I mean, it's kind of like how the infield fly rule is the worst rule in baseball. Not because of the necessity of it. It is one. But no, you understand in a moment. It's because it's impure. It is not a natural progression. It's like, okay, well, you can't do that. That's what the rule is. Right.
Yeah, it's not like part of the rules suite that we've done before. Yeah.
Right.
It's you can't just like drop cool. it and get a double play out of it.
Yeah. Right. Like that's stupid. We hate that. Yeah. You know?
Like, totally like a bunch of kids would be like, nah, dude, you can't. Oh, come on.
Right.
What? You can't do that.
Worse rule than baseball. You know, everything else is like, it makes sense. Okay, cool. It's part of this. Oh, here's this.
And it also leads to like weird things where people are like, wait, is that an infield fly? There was a big play against the Braves, or maybe the Braves.
Don't
did
mention
it.
That to Braves fans in the playoffs. Come on, don't do that one and shout in left
field.
It
was not an infield fly.
No, it was like, but because the umpire did that, oh, there you go.
So, like, what if there's like a misread on the and it's 100 and it's not 100?
Let's just have
like,
flags in baseball, okay? Let's just make it so that the Chiefs can make this
a challenge. Yeah. This pitcher's too good. Get him out of there.
Oh, gosh. But anyway, okay, bring us back here, Giolito. I'm very excited about this one. I think it's a blind spot for projections a lot when you have guys that go through a offseason and they come back kind of like DeGrom in a way. But then again, DeGrom looks so good and I'm just so excited for him. And you know what? You know, where are you ranking Jacob DeGrom this year?
Oh,
what are you
God,
doing with
it's
this?
So hard.
I know. We're going to put you through pain.
And it unveils all my biases as a player. Like, what am I doing right now? I'm playing in 15 team draft and holds with 50 rounds, right? And what happens in that is you don't get to any pickups during the season. Oh. And so what do I value right now? Like my first pitcher, I want him to have an A health grade. That's like what I value right now. I do not really want to take Chris Sale. Because if I take him, then I feel like my next pitcher has to have an A health grade. And maybe even my next two ones, because I got to make up for the fact that maybe Chris Sale's just going to miss half the season. You know, and so I have this bias towards that. And what has happened was I've pushed all the guys that I have sort of 130 to 145, 120 to 1. Basically the entire Dodgers rotation is now past 15. They're in this like 16 through 20. I almost have a tier of Dodgers and DeGrom. And it starts at like 14, 15, and it includes a little bit of Max Fried because I'm a little bit nervous about his innings total too. And it's like, these pitchers are excellent. Garrett I have no Cole. Idea how many innings you're going to get. Garrett Cole is a slight bit above because he was such a horse before.
Yeah. Really quick comments. One, A health grade sounds like it's Canadians, which is amazing. DeGrom and the Dodgers is an amazing sitcom that I recommend everybody watch. Third, I'm not in on DeGrom.
Tiers.
And Garrett Cole.
Why don't you make like a they're going to be injured tier? They're going to be injured,
well,
but they're awesome.
That's
tier.
Actually, you see my names of things.
What's the name of that tier?
So actually, what I'm doing here's the thing. Tyler Glasnow and DeGrom are not in the same tier for me because
why not?
I think it's going to be a six man with the Dodgers, and I think they're going to not just. I think with DeGrom, he's going to go out there every 5 days until he can't. And
okay. So
I'm not thinking
you might
about
actually get more innings out of him than DeGrom.
Well, it's more than that. It's you're in a 15 team draft and hold or whatever. Not what I'm referring to. I'm referring to your 12 teamers. Okay. Yeah. It's not draft and hold. It's redraft. He can make pickups all the time.
Oh, so when he's hurt, you put him on the IL or you drop him.
And you have another roster spot. And the quality of pitching this year, I think, is as high as I've seen in a very long time. At the 300s, 350s. I have guys on this list that are like at 400 ADP, 450. And I'm like, what? Last year, this would be like 250 or something. So I feel more confident in the guy that I pick up off the wire this year to compliment whenever Jacob DeGrom goes. And he's going every 5 days until he's not.
As opposed to Glasnow, you never get a two-star week out of him. If you're doing weeklies, you never get a two-star week. Or maybe he takes 2 weeks off.
Right. It's going to be less consistent of it. And I don't know when that IL stint's going to happen. If it does, whatever. It's just more like he's starting beautiful. Oh, he's on the IL. Okay, fine. You know, you move on.
I do have DeGrom with three more innings than Glasnow. So he's one spot ahead of him.
Oh, that's amazing.
Write that down in pen.
Yeah, there you go. But right, this is so I actually see DeGrom in a redraft. I'm actually really struggling. You said with your biases, like this is really eating at me because the logic I had that I think is pretty sound here is really saying
he's gonna be so good when he's in. Why don't I just take that?
He should be like SP4 or something.
Yeah.
you know, because of that, because
he started up higher and just kept, I kept pushing it down.
And what's going to happen?
I went on TV on MLB Now and said on MLB Network and said he's in my top 10. And now he's,
yeah. Well, now he's, I mean, certainly in my top 10. He should be in your top 10 too. Don't be ridiculous. Do it. But it's also, I mean, what's so hard is that I do the list every week in season. And what that means is that when it becomes April 24th and DeGrom has gone 3 starts and has had 8 strikeouts in each of them and just dominated, it's like, where do I put you now? You know, when we get to maybe June 10th and he's still healthy, like, how do I treat
this? Well, you're just going to keep him up there. Yeah, I guess.
Well, do I then say, well, there's less time to get injured now, so now you should be SP number one because you have been pitching like SP number one. Like, how much do I weigh in that future potential of it? And this is the healthiest.
It's a little bit like Sale, like last season. You're like, right. Oh, he's going to be hurt, right? He's going to be hurt. Wait, he's not going to be hurt? And then he was. Then people, you lost him for the last 3 weeks of the season, but you know, whatever.
But then I moved Glasnow to the top 3 of the ranks because I was just like, you are like demonstrably better than everyone else right now. And if I had a hurt teamer, I wouldn't give him up for someone who's performing worse than a weekly level right now. Right. And that's the hard part that I'm wrestling with myself.
And everybody's leagues has so different rules. Like if you have unlimited IL, like you should really just take a lot of those injured risk guys because you could just keep putting them on there and then some come back, some don't. The ones that do pitch are like, there's so many injured list guys that are so exciting. Like basically the whole Dodgers organization.
Well, guess what? We're going to be talking about that in the next panel here at PitchCon in about 5-6 minutes. All the injuries.
Strider, how many innings are you going to get from him? He's going to be great.
Oh, God. Where am I supposed to rank Strider?
I have no idea. He won't be. You could just not rank him because he won't start the season.
No. I rank them all in the preseason and then I take them all. Okay. All right.
Please.
I think that because we're drafting and then you're not drafting Spencer Strider in season. So whatever. Okay. But here's the thing. Here's the other argument, you know. Okay. Think about this. I'm talking about my 12 teamer. Okay. I'm talking about, quality when they pitch and not. When Strider comes back, you know it's dope, right? He's just going to be a stud the rest of the way. Let's just say it's June 1st.
But it may not be in April. Yeah.
Well, let's just say it's June 1st, though. That's 4 months of being a stud. So like Paul Skenes last year or something like that, right?
What did he end up being? He ended up being like a top 5 pitcher on the season, right? In fantasy.
I will also argue that a roster spot in April is more valuable than any other month.
Like freeing it up. So if you put him on the IL and now you get to pick up a guy for free. Yes.
Right.
But I play in so many leagues that don't have ILs at all.
Well, we're not ranking for those. Okay. We're ranking for the standard 12 teamers that have 2 to 3 IL spots. That is what we're ranking.
All right.
Okay. That's the standardized format. I feel for you who do not have that. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So that's the wrestling that I'm going through with Strider is just like, wait a second. I should be, but then it's like, well, things happen all the time that they're not fully healthy right when they come back or so, and they haven't proved it. Like DeGrom actually showed it.
I do really prefer a guy comes back and shows me even 3 innings or 10 innings.
DeGrom did that.
Because they got all the way back. They got into a game. They showed me their stuff. I wanted to see their stuff. We don't even know what Strider is going to sit, you know?
Well, here's the thing. We do know one guy. He was on a bullpen, but he threw 99 miles per hour. And that is Sandy Alcantara. Sandy Crush. Here we go. The projections hate him. They hate him. It's like a 4.3 ERA, 1.22 whip. Oh, my God.
Well, I've got a 3.37, so.
Okay. Well, that's a little bit better. I'm a fan. I'm not as much of a fan as I was previously because a lot of his value is rooted in volume, and it's very questionable how much.
And will he come back throwing that he was striking more people out with that cool breaking ball. He was throwing a better breaking ball.
Yeah,
but then did that hurt him?
I don't know.
It was a really hard curve, right? Was that what it was?
Slider.
Really hard curve.
I thought it was.
Or maybe the slider.
I mean, it was 4 pitch with a sinker, 4 seamer, change, slider, like amazingly hard change up like Edward Cabrera, who also I love because he's one of those guys that you see if he figured it out and added the slider or not, and you move on. And that's it.
Great. I guess.
Don't listen to the projections. Projections are worthless.
Unless you're me and you just love Edward Cabrera over and over again, throwing yourself against the wall just repeatedly.
You dirty stuffist.
Maybe next start he'll have it figured out.
All right. We have a couple more minutes. I'm just going to say the names of the ones that are on my list. I'm sure you did too. I have Reese Olson, who's really low on the projections. I'm just using ATC here. Kodai Senga, they're just saying he's going to have like a 128 whip, which I don't believe. Clay Holmes, they don't like him. I like him. I think he's going to be good. Ryan Nelson, who we were both also like, how is this working out? And I don't quite know, but it worked.
He has Gavin weird Williams. Home away splits.
Yeah, that was weird. Gavin Williams.
Oh, Gavin Williams on my list.
Dude. I'm a huge, I just think he just
figures it out or something.
Well, it's just like a lost year last year, and he has 7 feet of extension at 96, 97, even sometimes 98, and then also adapted to cutter, which is the, I honestly think is the whole thing about deception that we're talking about with two fastballs for strikes. With extension just means like they can't tell what it is. You know, it's the same lane for both. That's how Garrett Crochet went from a slider to a cutter, and it was absurd, right? And there's one other guy, I don't know if you know him. His name is Bobby Miller.
Yay, let's do it again. Yeah. Bobby Edward Cabrera Miller. I did like an oopsie versus steamer thing, and I realized that there's so many players that I like that, you know, oopsie just likes better than steamer, and I guess maybe I even like him better than oopsie. Gavin Williams is high on that list. Sean Burke is on that list.
Sean Burke.
But what I was really trying to do was find guys that maybe either projection didn't like and I still liked. And one of those is Zach Gallen. You know, they have them all going up to 3.8, 3.9, 4. And I get it, but the velo was starting to come back late last year. And he has two Gregan balls he can command pretty well. And like when we were talking, this is what I was getting at earlier with the sort of soft skills and the veteran pitcher. And like he has a big, he's like a big mix that he understands and he can kind of, yeah. I mean, sometimes he gets too pitchery. I know, but he has four pitches that he's used at different times. And I think he can go back to being a four pitch guy. And I think he has a pretty good feel for pitching. So that's one. And then Casey Mize is one where I just look at the parts and I'm like, listen, you've pushed that four seam to the point that it's a good pitch. I'm pretty sure it's a good pitch. And the splitter has been a pitch that you've had forever. You were drafted on the splitter. And now you're throwing the slider at 90 miles an hour. Like theoretically you're good.
You tell everybody that who after we recommended him and Matt Manning last year.
I told Casey Mize that to his face.
Yeah, he said, well, I don't have a feel for spin, right?
And he said, I know, man. I and I was like, do you feel like you're wandering in the woods and you're right about to break out? Like you're right on the edge of the woods and you just turn one more corner and you'll be out of the woods. And he's like, yeah, actually I do. And every start I feel very hopeful that like this is gonna be the one where I figure it out. He's like, he was a little depressed, but
oh man.
It was late last season, and he didn't really figure it out. But after I talked to him, he was throwing the slider at 89-90. After that, he was throwing it even harder after I talked to him. And, you know, it's either going to, like, he's either going to get hurt again or it's going to work.
Oh, my God. I really hope the band makes it. I really do. last year, too, we were really excited about the four-seamer and everything. And I think, honestly, when he first came up, the slider looked like a cutter. It was a golden pitch for him that was just maneuvered around, getting strikes whenever he wanted to.
He's just got to find some feel on a breaking ball. He admitted, he's just, I'm not the greatest at spin. But you have a good splitter. I was like, couldn't you give Kevin Gausman it then? And he's like, I don't know if I have Kevin Gossman's splitter.
Kevin Gausman's splitter is so strange. I was like, I understand that a couple people have tried the Kevin Gausman one, and I'm just like, how? Like, I remember seeing the grip. Maybe it was even your image
of it.
Yeah, I
have a picture of it, yeah.
And I was just like, I can't do this. You know, yeah. I have mitts, okay? And I'm just like, no, this doesn't, no, no.
It's funny, too, when they have those grips, and then you're like, and you throw that 87? Like, what? What?
Oh, that was a good genuine belly laugh. Like, right? How did you do that? Yeah.
Oh, I could see throwing that about 30.
Right. I mean, that's how I feel like a knuckleball. Like, how do you get this thing out of your hand and it doesn't just like plop in the ground in front of you?
All of mine go about 35 feet and just
right.
That's it.
Yeah. Now I have to be a knuckle dragger to pick this up. I get it. I get it. Yeah. Oh,
you got another.
Yeah, we got another panel. We got to go.
Real pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Oh, this was so great. You know, the craft is back. I'm down to do it weekly if you're down to do it weekly again. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it's about time. It's about time we bring back the craft of pitching. Enosaurus, tell everybody what you're up to.
Next week, I'm writing a story about how Stuff Plus has changed baseball. That'll come out next week. It has a bunch of cool visualizations and some difficult questions that have been thrown my way about injury, the role of injury, and that stuff like that. And then the week after that is the rankings, which will and then I think new Stuff Plus will go up on Fangraphs next week. So a lot of fun things happening very soon.
Oh boy. Oh, that's amazing. Eno, thank you so much for taking the time to join us here at PitchCon. Always a pleasure. And I'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks for having me.